With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Just so you know, this show is about scary stuff. So don't say I didn't warn you guys. And remember, don't be scared.
Episode 115, Long Branch, War Baby here with another episode of Murderous Minors. New Year's Eve 2021 marked 4 years since three members of the Kologi family and one friend out of Long Branch, New Jersey, were gunned down by one of their own. On this episode of Murderous Minors, we take a look at how the criminal case against the then 16-year-old alleged shooter has progressed at this point, and I'll fill you in on a few recent cases that will now be following. On December 31st, 2017, a 911 call came in to Long Branch, New Jersey police at roughly 11:43 p.m., just as East Coast residents prepared to ring in 2018. Gunshots had rung out from a red brick duplex on Wall Street near the famous Jersey Shore. Those in the area assumed that what they heard was fireworks or, at the worst, celebratory gunfire. Stephen Kologi and his wife Linda lived there in the house on Wall Street with three of their four children, 18-year-old Brittany, her older brother Stephen Jr., and their younger brother Scott, 16. Mary Schultz had come over to celebrate too, as did Stephen Jr.'s girlfriend and an aunt and uncle. A lifelong resident of Long Branch, population roughly 30,000, 42-year-old Stephen Kologi Sr. had graduated from the local high school and held such jobs as working in the warehouse at a Kellogg's plant and being a mail carrier. He was known for taking whatever jobs necessary and working whichever shifts he had to, and was most recently a truck driver for a concrete company. He was known for spending lots of time with his kids, coaching his boys in t-ball and baseball, and continuing to coach even when his own sons weren't playing. Friends from his softball league called him Cujo, and the mayor later recalled that his father Adrian and his partner Mary were always in attendance at his high school football games. The family was known to be close-knit, throwing barbecues and openly welcoming their children's friends into their home. Stephen's 44-year-old wife Linda was also a New Jersey native, having spent her early years in Jersey City and North Bergen before making Long Branch her home 25 years before. Linda had previously been a bus driver and was listed as most recently working for her oldest son's business. She'd spent many of the previous years homeschooling their 16-year-old son Scott, whom early reports stated is on the autism spectrum, according to some family and friends. We don't have an official diagnosis made public yet for the teen, but an aunt did mention that he was considered learning disabled, and his grandfather Adrian said that he'd had nerve damage from his birth and a brain tumor at some point as a child. 18-year-old Brittany Kologi had just graduated from Long Branch High School herself in June of 2017 and had just come to the end of her first semester as a health sciences major at Stockton College, an hour away in Galloway, New Jersey. 16-year-old Scott, no longer homeschooled, later told detectives that he was reading The Shining and that he liked anime and science fiction. He liked math, did well in school, and worked in his school library, telling investigators that he wanted to study horticulture and psychology when he got to college. New Year's Eve 2017 had been normal by all accounts given by those who had interacted with various members of the family before they were killed. In the late morning, Linda had visited her regular convenience store across the street from her house and bought a bottle of water and her usual lottery ticket. Stephen had hit up his favorite spot 3 blocks away that morning, Flavo's liquor store, buying a pack of smokes and a 6-pack of beer like he was known to do just about every other day. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary, however, before the night's end, 16-year-old Scott, youngest child of Linda and Stephen Kologi Sr., would carry out a plan that his grandfather Adrian said he knew he'd been pondering for a while. He told NJ1015.com in an interview published exactly 1 year after the murders that, quote, "My grandson was obsessed with killing his family, and that trying to warn his son and daughter-in-law didn't do anything but make Scott angry." In his police interview, the 16-year-old said he first considered walking the streets and firing on a neighbor who used to bully him, but as the new year approached, however, he went upstairs, retrieved his brother's legally purchased Century Arms Model C-39 V2 rifle from its case and loaded 30 bullets into 2 magazines. The American Shooting Journal once dubbed the gun the American AK-47. Per Kologi's own admission, he turned off the light so that his mother wouldn't see him when she came to look for him, which he was sure she would do. He described wearing earplugs, sunglasses, and a black leather jacket, kind of like the Terminator from the movies. With the older brother who'd escaped acting as his guardian, the teen described to detectives how he'd been experiencing hallucinations since he was a little kid, like seeing a ghost-like woman float through the ceiling. He said he'd been planning to massacre his family for much of 2017 and that he'd been experiencing wild mood swings as well. When Linda Kologi went to find her youngest son, he shot her 5 to 7 times in the chest, killing her quickly. He said that, quote, "I just didn't want her to look at me. I think that would have snapped me out of it." Quickly after, Stephen Kologi came running after his wife and was shot 4 times in the back, killed from behind when he came to see what was going on. The teen described heading downstairs next and shooting his grandfather's companion, 70-year-old Marianne Schultz, 4 times. Rampage still incomplete, Kologi turned the rifle at his sister, 18-year-old Brittany, who had just posted a selfie with her cat on Snapchat moments earlier. He shot her 3 times in the head and chest as she sat in the kitchen. Kologi said that he, quote, "felt like he was watching a movie." This was the first time he'd ever shot a gun and had used videos from the internet to learn how to do it. He described aiming at his family members' heads because, although he was murdering them, he, quote, "didn't want them to be in pain at the same time." He said he was thinking, quote, "like, what am I doing? Like, I don't even know how to use a gun. I don't even know how to load it, and let alone how a recoil would be." It wasn't until he saw his grandfather fall to the ground by his wounded girlfriend saying, quote, "No, no, Mary," that Kologi said he was brought back to reality. 20-year-old Stephen Jr. asked his brother what he was doing, telling him that he was calling the cops, which he did as he fled the house with the aunt and uncle. His girlfriend called police from inside the house, where she and the grandfather remained until police arrived. 16-year-old Scott Kologi had set the gun down and gone back upstairs to wait for the police. 18-year-old Brittany Kologi, 42-year-old Stephen Kologi Sr., 44-year-old Linda Kologi, and 70-year-old Mary Schultz had all been shot and died in separate rooms. Mary, the partner of Adrian Kologi, was a retired HR specialist, having spent most of the previous 10 years delving into local genealogy as well as acting in community theater. Scott Kologi referred to her throughout his recorded police interview as his grandmother. At first, the teen told investigators that, quote, "I don't want to say much and I couldn't really say," when asked what happened earlier that night. He went on to describe his hallucinations as something he, quote, "never really talked about." Kologi said that for the past year he'd been having extreme mood swings and that he sometimes didn't feel like himself. When asked if he felt like himself now, Kologi said he did and that it was strange that it wasn't, quote, "affecting him." He told detectives that he knew right from wrong, but, quote, "it's like nothing happened. I doubt I would do it again, but I'm not sure." He said that he loved his parents and that they were good parents and, quote, "that was the strange thing." He told police that he should be in an institution. During the teen's New Year's Day interrogation that took place 2 hours after the murders, 20-year-old Stephen Kologi Jr. sat in with his younger brother, putting aside his emotions regarding what he had done in order to make sure that he didn't speak to the police alone. He tousled the teen's hair and told him things like, quote, "don't worry about it, okay? Just tell these guys everything. We all got your back, buddy." And cried openly as he listened to what his little brother told investigators. When Scott was escorted to the bathroom, his older brother began to weep and threw a cup at the wall, saving his outward displays of anger for when the teen wasn't in the room. Their grandfather Adrian recounted seeing his grandson for the last time that night at the police station, ignoring the teen when he shouted, quote, "I love you, Grandpa." The man told the reporter that his grandson, quote, "had a strange way of showing love." A gag order was placed on the case and Scott Kologi was sent to Middlesex County Youth Detention Center to wait for his court appearance, which was postponed as the Asbury Park Press filed a motion to have access to the proceedings. The judge denied their request because he was charged as a juvenile. It wasn't until November 2019, almost 2 years after the murders, that Kologi was charged as an adult, with the case being moved from family court to criminal court, and 2 months later he was indicted on the 4 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of second-degree possession of a weapon for an unlawful purpose with which he'd been charged. He pleaded not guilty. Kologi's defense attorneys did everything they could during that time to keep the case in family court, stressing that the teen had not been treated for his hallucinations or his autism. Once the case was waived, he fought to have Kologi transferred to a secure psychiatric facility instead of the county jail. However, his request was denied. The defense stated following the indictment that, quote, "our investigation of the case and his mental health remains in full force. We have several experts in line to examine Scott who will give us reports about his mental health and competency." The assistant DA doesn't agree, however, stating that, quote, "it's the state's position that this defendant acted in a calculated, premeditated, and a very sophisticated manner in the commission of these crimes." News reports attempting to grasp any hint of a motive highlighted the couple's 2009 bankruptcy and August 2017 foreclosure notice on the Wall Street property, even publishing some of Linda Kologi's tweets in which she repeatedly thanked the band The Foo Fighters for making music that she said had repeatedly kept her from taking her own life. And though these personal aspects of their lives were upsetting, they don't explain why their child desired to murder them and others. In February 2021, it was determined that the videotaped statement made at the police station just hours after the murders would be admissible in the trial. The defense had also contended that allowing Scott's older brother to act as guardian during the interview presented a conflict of interest, saying in a statement, quote, "despite the fact that Stephen Kologi was a victim in the crime, just witnessed his family get murdered and could have had potential liability for leaving his firearm unsecured around a juvenile, Detectives Tozzi and Verdadero chose Stephen to sit with Scott when he waived his Miranda rights." Stephen advised Scott to confess to 4 murders. The detective said that Stephen Jr. had told them prior to the interviews that he wanted to be there for his brother, and the prosecution said that, quote, Stephen Jr. treated the defendant as a big brother would treat a little brother. He did not treat the defendant as the person who had just murdered four family members, the prosecutors wrote. The judge rejected the claim, saying that not only had the alleged shooter's brother not been threatened with potential weapons charges, but that he'd acted in the teen's best interest. He ruled that Kologi knowingly and voluntarily waived his rights prior to engaging in the taped interview. Scott Kologi, now 20 years old, is currently awaiting trial and faces 30 years to life if convicted on each murder charge and 5 to 10 years if convicted on the weapons charge. This show is sponsored by Best Fiends. The thing about Best Fiends is you can just get lost in it, no matter where or when you play, because even grown-ups deserve distractions too. Life can't all be about paying bills and aging, so when you need a clean break from the moment, look no further than Best Fiends, the best mobile puzzle game out there. Since you don't need Wi-Fi to play, the possibilities for places to have fun are endless. While you're waiting for your movie to start or for your table to be ready, it's perfectly acceptable to whip it out and squash some fiends. There are so many cute characters to collect and level up, making you more unstoppable every day, with new characters and new levels added all the time. I have to admit I've been slacking a little bit on my playing with the holidays and everything, but I'm currently at 742 and I'm back in my groove. Once you play Best Fiends, you'll literally never be bored again. Download Best Fiends free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Now on to some newer cases we'll be following up on in the future. Early November evenings are a lovely time to visit Chautauqua City Park in Fairfield, Iowa. It was a relaxing activity that 66-year-old Nohima Graber enjoyed frequently, which is why it was the center of the search effort after she never came home. Mrs. Graber had been teaching Spanish at Fairfield High School since 2012, where she was beloved by students and staff alike and enjoyed acting as a community liaison between the growing Hispanic population and her Catholic church. But she was even more than just a liaison. She cared deeply for her family, students, and her community, making sure that people in need were fed, clothed, and in connection with whatever services or support they might need when joining their community anew. With a population of 9,000 that consists of roughly 3% Hispanic residents, most of them knew Nohima Graber and counted her as an influential part of their lives. Her faith and her culture were dear to her, and on November 1st, 2021, the first day of the two-day traditional Mexican observance of Día de los Muertos, Mrs. Graber had spoken with a local paper about the Fairfield Public Library's Day of the Dead event. According to the Des Moines Register, she offered insight into the philosophy, telling the Fairfield Ledger reporter that, quote, "We know we're all going to die. It's our way of laughing at death."
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The very next day, she was gone. Mrs. Graber was the type of teacher who attended every theatrical or musical event at her high school and hadn't pursued a degree in teaching until she had married, had one daughter and two sons, and was in her 50s. Born in southern Mexico, Mrs. Graber had been a flight attendant in the 1970s with North America's first airline. She met her husband Paul around that time, and the newlyweds lived in Mexico City before settling in his hometown of Fairfield, Iowa, to start a family. Those who knew Nohima Graber labeled her with titles such as angel and gentle soul, whose love of different cultures and languages flowed over into everyone she met. In addition to raising her three kids, Mrs. Graber cared about her students with the entirety of her soul, whether it was by demanding to see prom pictures so she could shower them with praise, or by making the members of the school band stand during class so their classmates could, quote, clap on them. She knew about her students' skills and loves and talents and encouraged them to nurture and develop them, and kept tabs on her students long after they were gone. The morning of Wednesday, November 3rd arrived, 1 week before her birthday, and there was no sign of Mrs. Graber, whose last known location was thought to be Chautauqua City Park near Fairfield High School, where she took her daily late afternoon walks. Her family grew concerned, and ex-husband Paul reported her missing to police, and after several hours of searching the wooded park, the body of Nohema Graber was located. It was evident that she'd been a victim of homicide and, quote, had suffered inflicted trauma to the head. Mrs. Graber had been concealed, buried beneath a pile of debris including a wheelbarrow, railroad ties, and a tarp. Several people in the park that day were questioned, and ultimately an unidentified teen tipped investigators off to some social media message exchanges between himself and his 16-year-old friends, Fairfield High School students Willard Noble Chaden Miller and Jeremy Everett Goodell. According to investigators, Chaden Miller and Jeremy Goodell targeted their Spanish teacher and had routinely stalked her to determine when they could ambush and murder her. The criminal complaint for Goodell states that, quote, the associate provided investigators with social media exchanges indicative of Goodell having specific details of the disappearance and subsequent death of Graber. The details included but were not limited to the motive for killing Graber, the planning and execution of the means to kill Graber, as well as deliberate attempts to conceal the crime. The criminal complaint for Miller says, quote, the associate also provided information relative to subsequent social media communications indicative of Miller also being involved and present for the death of Graber. When interviewed, quote, Miller admitted to being in Chautauqua City Park as the murder was taking place, providing materials utilized in committing the murder, and aiding in actions taken to conceal the murder. The motive has not been released to the public, and early concerns that this was a racially motivated crime have not developed into any kind of working hate crime theory. By most indications, Mrs. Graber's Mexican roots were not a factor in her killing. However, the possibility will continue to be considered, according to the Jefferson County attorney. Several students were interviewed by local station KCCI, with one saying that he knew Miller, quote, did speak, not in a murderous way, but in a very aggressive way, for dislike toward Mrs. Graber. Other students reported that an argument between the teacher and a student occurred on Tuesday afternoon, just hours before Mrs. Graber's disappearance, and that this student was also seen in the park later, around the time of her murder. Miller and Goodell were in custody by the day after Mrs. Graber was reported missing and her body was found, and the alleged killer's names and mugshots were made public, as both were charged as adults with murder in the first degree and conspiracy to commit a forcible felony, each held on $1 million cash-only bond. The criminal complaints go on to reveal that a search of Goodell's home had turned up bloody clothing and that the messages given to police made it clear that he had specific knowledge regarding his Spanish teacher's disappearance and her murder. Both Miller and Goodell were seen by witnesses in the park the afternoon of the murder, and their statements aided in locating the clothing and placing the two of them at the scene between roughly 3:57 and 4:42 p.m. on Tuesday. 2 days before Thanksgiving, a bond review hearing was held where the defense attorneys were seeking a reduction in bond large enough that their clients could secure pretrial release. Miller's attorney tried to argue that his lack of a prior criminal record, his stable home address, and good attendance in school made him a low flight risk should he be released from juvenile detention to await trial. Her other stance was that keeping juveniles away from their families has a long-proven detrimental effect on their well-being. The state felt differently, stressing that these teens lived at home when they committed the crime, so offering 24/7 parental supervision now is too little too late. Goodale's public defender basically said that her client was indigent and without the financial means to flee, even if he wanted to. She requested that his bond be reduced to $100,000. In their rebuttal, the district attorney pointed out that the Department of Corrections had recently evaluated Goodale and recommended he not be released. The state then requested the teen's bail to be kept as is or even raised to $2 million. 1 month after the murder, Judge Joel Yates issued his written ruling saying that numerous factors were considered that led him to the decision to keep everything as it was, writing, quote, "The court finds that bail shall remain as previously fixed in the amount of $1 million cash only." So Jeremy Goodale and Chayden Miller, both 16, remain in juvenile detention centers until trial. They've both pleaded not guilty. Their next hearings are scheduled for January 27, 2022, when the court will be addressing requests from both teens' attorneys to have their cases moved to juvenile court. In response to the filing, court attorney Chauncey Moulding filed documents which included even more disturbing details about the murder to stress the importance of leaving no chance for release at the age of 21, which could occur with a juvenile court sentence. Moulding stressed that the evidence indicates that the pair surveilled Mrs. Graber, getting to know her daily habits in order to ambush and murder her, adding that they even returned after she was dead to conceal her body further. Saying that, quote, "This prosecuting attorney cannot fathom any combination of programming at any Iowa juvenile facility which could appropriately treat or rehabilitate the defendant if adjudicated as a juvenile." Their trial date has been tentatively set for April 19, 2022, with the request to have their cases moved to juvenile court scheduled for January 27th. Should they be tried and convicted in adult court, Goodale and Miller would face life in prison with the possibility of parole since they were juveniles when the crimes occurred. We'll check in on this story again in the future. This episode is sponsored by EveryPlate. The great thing about EveryPlate is that it has so much to offer. Whether you're looking to save time, save money, learn to cook, or get some recipe inspiration, EveryPlate is here to help. There's not much I dread more than trying to figure out what's for dinner tonight, so nothing makes me happier than an EveryPlate delivery because I know that it means less work for me. The meals are delicious, affordable, and delivered right to your door with the instructions and ingredients ready whenever you are. And not only can you eliminate meal planning and grocery shopping, but even at full price, EveryPlate is 50% cheaper than a meal you'd make yourself. One meal is about the same price as a cup of coffee. Choose from 17 different recipes every week by swapping out the proteins, veggies, and sides that you want, and I promise that there's always tasty, nutritious meals that everyone in your family will enjoy. Last week, I tried the mushroom biscuit pot pie with bacon, and I'm already craving it again. The garlic mashed potatoes are always a hit, too. It's so fun to have foods you already enjoy prepared in a new way. Get ready to find a whole new life with the time and money you save. Try EveryPlate for just $1.79 per meal by going to EveryPlate.com and entering code WARBABY179. That's EveryPlate.com and entering code WARBABY179. On the day after Christmas, three teenage boys were shot and killed and one seriously injured inside the Texaco gas station in downtown Garland, Texas, about 20 miles northeast of Dallas. Police recovered and released security camera footage from outside the convenience store, which shows a man parking a white Dodge Ram truck, then going inside and returning soon after with his purchase. The truck pulled out, circled around the back of the gas pumps, and came to a halt in the middle of the throughway, blocking in some parked cars in front of the gas station. A shirtless, seemingly young male passenger is then seen exiting the front passenger side, going around the rear of the truck as he headed toward the Texaco's entrance. The video shows him creeping along the storefront's glass windows, wearing a disposable face mask and peering inside until he reached the door, at which time he flung it open with one hand and opened fire with the other. Police recovered just over 20 40 caliber shell casings from the scene. He's next seen running back to the waiting truck and getting in through the closest door, the back seat on the driver's side, before they speed from the parking lot. Police responding to the shots fired found three dead inside, including 14-year-old Xavier Gonzalez, who had just gone in to buy food for his family. His body was found in the dining area. He played football at school and loved the Dallas Cowboys, especially player Ezekiel Elliott. His uncle told the media that, quote, he didn't make it home because somebody made a bad decision. Also killed was Rafael Garcia, 17, and Ivan Noyla, 16, who police determined were in the store together. A 15-year-old employee was shot in the chest and survived, spending 9 days in the hospital recovering. He'd just begun working at the taco shop inside the convenience store 3 days earlier after returning to the U.S. from Mexico. His 17-year-old cousin Michelle was the manager on duty and there with him when the shootings took place. One or both of the teens who were in the Texaco together, Rafael and Ivan, were soon determined to have been the likely target, with Xavier and the cook simply unlucky. Rafael, one of 10 siblings, loved playing football and soccer and worked as much as he could to help support his elderly parents doing construction. His family added, though, that he'd been living with a friend since March and reported as a runaway, but that they'd spoken to him on Christmas Eve and he seemed to be fine. According to the getaway driver's arrest affidavit, Rafael's sister showed detectives social media messages they'd received in the hours after the murder, such as, "Your brother's dead, it's all your fault," along with an acronym associated with a local chapter of the Bloods gang. The fake Instagram account was traced to a verified phone number and then to a local 14-year-old boy, whose description seemed to match the shooter from the video. He was located and arrested in connection to the murders the day after they took place, on Monday, December 27th. Police were so confident that they had the correct individual in custody that they held a press conference to announce the suspected shooter's arrest. That teen was interviewed the next day, Tuesday, December 28th, telling police that he'd found out about the shooting from the news and through a group chat when someone allegedly named the shooter. He went on to say that he knew who had been killed and described being afraid of two of those three boys, though all three names are redacted from the affidavit. The security video of the truck's driver had been made public by then, and while investigators questioned the teen in custody, 33-year-old Richard Acosta Jr. turned himself into Garland police, saying that he thought he was wanted as a witness. His attorney contends that the man had simply gone to the Texaco to grab some medicine for his pregnant wife, which he was seen purchasing on the video. Acosta said he began to leave but swung back around because his 14-year-old son Abel wanted to run in and buy cough drops for himself before they left. While his son was inside, he said he just waited and talked to his wife. He said that he heard the shooting and ducked down in his seat, but that he didn't realize his son was involved or that he was even armed. Acosta told his attorney that the teen jumped in the truck in a frenzy, saying that, quote, some people got into it inside the store. He said he drove his son home but took him a few houses down to his own mother's house so that the teen could calm down at his grandmother's and away from the pregnant wife at home. From there, he said, his son took off in a car, and he didn't have any idea where he had gone. He said that he looked for his son for a while before turning himself into police after seeing himself on the news. Richard Acosta, a Dallas area contractor, has a very small rap sheet consisting of one assault charge for a fight. He was arrested and charged with 3 counts of capital murder and is currently being held in the Dallas County Jail on $3 million bond. Prosecutors allege that he knowingly acted as lookout and getaway driver for his 14-year-old son as the teen carried out the Texaco shooting. Once police had the elder Acosta in custody, they realized that the masked, shirtless teen they saw opening fire on the video was likely Acosta's 14-year-old son, Abel, and not the teen that they had arrested in connection to the taunting DMs from the victim's sister's Instagram and whom they were currently interviewing. That boy was released on December 28th, but police have labeled him a person of interest. 14-year-old Abel Elias Acosta became a fugitive at that point. Wanted in connection with a triple homicide and an attempted homicide with an initial $5,000 reward for information leading to his capture. The 5'5", 125-pound teen is thought to be actively evading authorities, possibly in Mexico, and on New Year's Eve, the owner of local KPIR radio contributed an additional $5,000 to the original Garland Crime Stoppers reward, bringing the total current reward to $10,000. His father's attorney maintains that, quote, evidence will show that the elder Acosta didn't know his son had a gun with him or that he planned to commit multiple homicides while they were out running errands, adding that, quote, our position is he didn't do anything to solicit or encourage his son to do this. Garland police released the teen's name and image to the public despite his age due to the severity of his alleged crimes and because he's considered armed and dangerous, presumed to be in possession of the murder weapon, which he often posed with online. 14-year-old Abel Elias Acosta has been charged with capital murder and remains on the run. Call Garland Crime Stoppers at 1-972-272-TIPS. That's 1-972-272-8477 or visit garlandcrimestoppers.org online if you know where he is.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.